From the Danker Studio on Library Square, this is The Rundown, a live exploration of local news, current events, and issues that matter to you. Coming up on the program, a conversation with Brian Mensch, founder and president of the Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment, on the public health risks of poor air quality and why he wants to stop the expansion of Salt Lake's Tesoro Refinery.
Not all air pollution is created equal. Refinery emissions are uniquely toxic. They have more of the worst stuff you can imagine in them than just typical urban smog that might come out of a tailpipe.
Also, the University of Utah Hospital's new and improved burn unit, and a summary of today's top local headlines. That and more just ahead on The Rundown, here on KCPW. And thanks for joining us today for The Rundown, where we look at local news, current events, politics, and ideas. Later in the program, we'll have a conversation with Brian Mensch, founder and president of the Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment, on the region's poor air quality and on his efforts to stop the expansion of the Tesoro Refinery on Salt Lake's northwest side. But we begin today with a summary of today's top local news stories. The world's largest trade show for outdoor gear is back in Salt Lake City for a four-day run. More than 1,300 manufacturers and suppliers are packing every square inch of the floor of the Salt Palace Convention Hall, plus three outdoor tents, with the opening of the Outdoor Retailer's Summer Market on Wednesday. Organizers expect more than 25,000 people to attend, most of whom are retailers, who will be placing orders for inventory. It's a showcase of technology for everything from socks that can take a beating to water bottles that can feature battery-powered ultraviolet purifiers. The makers of a pint-sized but powerful hydrogen battery say it can give a cell phone five full charges before it needs a recharge itself. Also on display are featherweight canoes, kayaks, and stand-up paddle boards. The summer and winter trade shows have been a mainstay of Salt Lake City since 1996. And people arriving at that expo in downtown Salt Lake City on Wednesday were being greeted by a protester dressed in a giant, half-plucked goose costume. KCPW's Jordan Allred has that story.
Ashley Byrne, a campaign specialist at People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, or PETA, was one of a handful of activists passing out flyers to protest the use of down feathers found in various types of equipment that will be on display at the expo.
We want the attendees of the Outdoor Retailers Expo to learn about the cruelty that goes on behind the scenes in the down industry. Cruelty-free down alternatives are just as warm and durable, and they're readily available, and so we just are asking retailers and consumers to choose those instead. We've had a lot of people saying that either they don't buy down already or they will not buy it or not use it from now on.
Many attendees, like Ben Heinrichs, stopped for a moment on their way into the expo to take pictures of the goose costume and talk with PETA protesters. Heinrichs described what he learned and what effect it would have on his future shopping.
Apparently they just pluck the feathers out and then let them regrow the feathers and pluck them again, and it's not the most humane thing. I mean, it might cross my mind when I see something with down in it, but I don't know if it'll change anything.
PETA is encouraging shoppers to check labels for synthetic down or other alternatives, which the organization says are superior options since down loses some of its insulating properties when wet. For KCPW News, I'm Jordan Allred.
And in other news, police have recovered more than 1,200 cases of liquor that were stolen from a West Valley City parking lot. Woods Cross police say thieves stole a semi-truck and trailer containing the alcohol on Friday night and drove it to Woods Cross. Corporal Jason Matthews says the alcohol, worth an estimated $200,000, was loaded into another trailer and then left locked up. The empty truck had been abandoned in Salt Lake County. Matthews says the trucking company's owner later activated the truck's GPS system, which led police to the missing alcohol on Monday. Matthews says none of the bottles were missing, and none of it had been drunk. The Salt Lake Tribune reports that officials were still investigating on Tuesday. Nearly 1,000 people are expected in Salt Lake City this week for a symposium featuring panels and workshops on a number of different Mormon issues. The Utah Sunstone Symposium opens Wednesday and runs through Saturday at the University of Utah in Salt Lake City. This year's theme is Mormon Bodies, Literal, Metaphorical, Doctrinal. The nearly 200 scheduled presenters were asked to contemplate how Mormon ideas about sex, sin, illness, and pleasure affect how church members experience their bodies. Other topics include the prospects of ordaining women, the reported faith crisis in contemporary Mormonism, and how Mormons deal with gays and lesbians. Symposium director Mary Ellen Robertson says most of the participants are current or former members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. The Burns Center at the University of Utah Hospital covers a five-state area and treats around 500 people on an inpatient basis every year. A new upgrade to the facility will help patients better cope during their difficult time staying at the center. KCPW reporter Kim Shusky has this story.
I was working on the power lines and an accident happened, and I received like a shock, about 14,400 volts, and it burned my hands.
Samwana Matigi, who goes by Sam, was 34 years old and training to become a power lineman 2.5 years ago. The electricity entered through his left hand and exited through the right. He lost both.
Oh yeah, it was really difficult, especially thinking about the future and what I was going to do. You know, I was just in shock when it happened, not only physically, but mentally.
Sam was moved from a burn center in Colorado to one at the University of Utah to be closer to his family. Brad Wiggins is the clinical nurse coordinator for the burn center. He has been at the center for 22 years.
People don't expect to be here, and people are changed dramatically when they have their skin damaged. I think that it really impacts them emotionally. They have to learn how to manage their life again. They have to learn how to take on the challenges that the public puts on them for looking different. And I think at the end of the day, they have to learn how to be a survivor, not a victim.
Through inpatient and outpatient care, the goal of the burn center is to help patients do just that, says Wiggins. But he adds that there are also difficult challenges that the staff and patients have to go through together while the patient is recovering from their wounds.
You're damaging the largest organ of your body. You're at high risk for infection. You're at high risk to have a septic infection that could actually go on to kill you. You have to have aggressive wound care. The only way to maintain that wound is to clean it regularly with soap and water daily, sometimes twice a day. And it's incredibly painful. It's probably one of the more painful experiences that people would tell you hospital-wide.
Sam says over his 2-month stay, the staff was amazing. But the old facilities left a lot to be desired. The room was very small and dark. There were only 2 bathrooms for 12 patients, and there was no couch or bed in the room for families or friends to stay with their loved ones.
I had to get up out of my bed every time I needed to go to the restroom, go all the way to that corner. Required a lot of energy, and it was pretty tough.
The center has been expanded and redesigned, doubling the amount of space, adding 3 additional patient rooms, and making the patient space more inviting. You might not expect a private restroom, a large window with a view, and big open spaces to be a major issue to people who are in the hospital with grave injuries. But Wiggins says the environment where care is delivered is important for recovery.
It just looked old and kind of dark, and this is bright and light, and I think it promotes wellness. And I think we're going to see patients get better faster because of this new environment. I'm excited about that.
The expanded center also has a playroom for kids, who make up 35% of the patients. Sam says while the setting is important for comfort, the staff is what really makes the difference.
These guys here at the U of U, they do a great job of helping everyone have hope. And that's just like the key of recovery, you know?
Because of difficulty finding advice on how to do things without hands, Sam has created a YouTube channel called No Handed Bandit. He has videos on how to play basketball, shave, and use a computer, among many others. For KCBW, I'm Kim Shusky.
And that's our local news summary for the day. I'm Roger McDonough, and you're listening to The Rundown here on KCPW. And now we turn to our discussion with Brian Mensch, founder and president of the Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment. On July 22nd, his group and the Sierra Club filed a stay with the Department of Environmental Quality, seeking to block the Tesoro refinery update because of their concerns over air quality. In addition, the groups are protesting what they call the Division of Air Quality, or DAQ's, intent to approve the expansion of the nearby Holly Oil Refinery. Dr. Mensch, thanks for coming in and speaking with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So your organization and the Sierra Club have sued to stop the expansion of the Tesoro Oil Refinery on Salt Lake's northwest side. First off, why?
Everyone who lives here along the Wasatch Front recognizes that there's a severe air pollution problem. The oil refineries, as a group and individually, of course, are a significant contributor to that problem. So it doesn't make any sense to us whatsoever that the state would allow the refineries to expand when we're already suffering from a severe pollution problem that the state acknowledges their, quote, state implementation plan, or SIP, is not adequate to address. So to us, it flies in the face of what we know we have to do to protect public health. It contradicts what we know we have to do in terms of compliance with national air quality standards. So for both of those reasons, allowing the refineries to expand in this context really is something that we can't put up with.
So what exactly have you guys done? Have you've asked for an injunction, or what is the action that you're taking?
Well, we've been protesting the expansions of the refineries, in particular Tesoro and Hawley, ever since their applications were first submitted. So we formally objected to them through the comment period. When the expansion permit was granted to Tesoro, we challenged that right from the beginning. One of our contentions and issues is that the format that is required by state law for this challenge to proceed involves the DEQ to then appoint an administrative law judge to hear the case. They waited almost 5 months to appoint that judge after we filed our appeal. That's one of many examples where we feel like the DEQ is not responding to the need to protect public health.
So part of the expansion of just the Tesoro plant itself is meant to clean up the plant's emissions. They say that the additional crude they'll process has a lower sulfur content and that the equipment they'll use will cut particulate emissions. As far as air quality goes, aren't upgrades to industry, desirable?
Well, they're certainly dressing this up much differently than what our refinery experts, who we have actually consulted to scrutinize these permits, have concluded. And that's why we're involved in this. That's why we've taken the action, because our refinery experts say that's not true. What is true is that they can, through various upgrades, produce less pollution per unit of product refined. But when you're increasing the overall volume of product refined, it's not true that the overall pollution from the facility will go down. In Hawley's case, they're more than doubling production capacity. That's what they intend to do. And yet they're trying to sell the idea, and the state is trying to sell the idea. The DEQ spokespersons have actually supported this contention that their overall emissions will go down. That is not true. Their emissions per unit of refined product will go down, but not the overall emissions from the facility. And there are various other things that are not calculated in that contention that emissions will go down, like each one of these refineries will be bringing hundreds of new diesel trucks carrying this substrate to and from their facilities. Those emissions definitely are a significant increase, maybe as much as a third of the overall emissions related to the refinery expansions. They're not accounted for in any of this. So, I mean, they're basically taking a pass on those kinds of emissions, and yet they certainly are going to increase the overall emissions of this project.
So I'm wondering about if the location of the refinery and of all of these refineries, actually, I think all five refineries in the state are here in the Salt Lake region. Is the location part of the problem?
Well, about three or four months ago, we actually started a campaign wherein we said, given the fact that there seems to be interest on the part of many state legislators to move the prison, we ought to rethink this whole thing and let's move the refineries, not the prison. Hmm. Now, it certainly is true that the refineries were there before much of the population was there. Some of them have been there almost 100 years. But that's not really the point, is who was there first. What the point is what kind of public health impact is it having? And it's having a significant public health impact. So rather than put public money into basically facilitating more urban sprawl and more pollution from that, i.e. move the prison so we can subdivide it, our contention is let's put public money and some refinery money and let's move these things to a more remote location, and that'll help the air pollution along the Wasatch Front for sure. And over the long term, it'll probably pay off. But if we're not going to do that, we certainly shouldn't be allowing them to expand and pollute even more than they are.
At the same time, the Division of Air Quality's, the DAQ's, Bryce Bird says that they plan to require even greater emission cuts from refineries in the near future. So What do you think about the state's plans to address air pollution?
To say we're going to permit these expansions and we're going to permit them to pollute more. And then once we get the state implementation plan approved and enforced, then we're going to go back and say, oh, by the way, now you've got to redo all this stuff. That doesn't make any sense. To us, it's a way of another way of many of the DAQs capitulating to industry.
I'm thinking about the one of your complaints is that the Title V, I think it is, permit and permitting program, the whole Title V program, which is an Environmental Protection Agency program, hasn't been implemented, or these permits aren't being issued. The state agencies say the permit themselves is sort of a nominal permit. But you say that that's a part of a public process for people to be able to have oversight. Can you talk a little bit about that?
When Congress passed laws in the early 1990s to require Title V permits under the George H.W. Bush administration in that era, they certainly didn't think that Title V permits were inconsequential or they wouldn't have passed the law. Most of the refineries in the country, the overwhelming majority of refineries in the country, have Title V permits. They're supposed to have them. All major sources of pollution are supposed to have them. And they're very complicated, but from a layperson's point of view, they are permits that basically allow watchdog groups, like ours, for example, any sort of segment of the public, to examine more easily the activities of major sources of pollution and see if they're, in fact, doing what they're supposed to do, see if they're adhering to their permit, see if they're actually keeping their emissions under the limits of those permits. So Congress thought it was an important thing to pass back in the early 1990s. The Bush administration signed off onto the idea. Utah is pretty unique in that none of our refineries have those Title V permits, not one of them. We think that given our air pollution problem, given the fact that Title V permits are supposed to be issued to all major pollution sources and that none of our refineries do have them, we think that's a situation that the citizens should demand be rectified.
So you as a physician, you're somebody who has repeatedly called the air quality that we have here. You've referred to it as a public health crisis. What's the data on what's happening because of our air quality in terms of public health? What are the risks?
Within about the last 10 years, there have been approximately 3,000 medical studies published in the mainstream medical literature throughout the world, giving us a clear indication that air pollution is a much more serious health issue than what we used to believe. And probably the easiest way to understand physiologically and in terms of health outcomes what it causes is it causes here, say, along the Wasatch Front, the amount of pollution we're exposed to causes about the same sort of disease consequence as if we all lived with an active smoker, if we were exposed to that much secondhand smoke. And quantitatively, that's about 25% of the impact as if we were doing the smoking ourselves. Now, bear in mind that this overall community blanket of, you can think of it as secondhand cigarette smoke, is not just affecting adults. It's being breathed in by pregnant women and by children, certainly by the elderly, and it's having a disproportionate amount of health outcomes on those people. But a quick summary would include information like this. If we use the American Heart Association's formula on how many increased deaths a community experiences from air pollution, we use their formula and then we apply the data from the DAQ here along the Wasatch Front. We conclude between 1 and 2,000 people here in Utah die prematurely every year because of our air pollution. Now, if the Department of Health were to say we're losing 1 to 2,000 people every year because of the Ebola virus, the public would be freaking out, as well they should. But these people are just as dead as if they've been killed by the Ebola virus.
So can we talk a little bit about the emphasis in the state on transportation? I mean, we hear, or at least I've read in the press, that Division of Air Quality and others have said our inversion problem during the winter and maybe our ozone problem in the summer, these are the result most specifically of transportation, of cars and trucks. But what about the impact of industry and refineries on our air quality? I mean, the case that you guys have brought before Tesoro looks at both the increase in diesel trucks, but also in the increased emissions from refining process itself.
Well, let's look in particular at the refineries for a minute. There are a couple of things that really raise some red flags. One is refinery emissions, or let me back up a step. Not all air pollution is created equal. Refinery emissions are uniquely toxic. They have more of the worst stuff you can imagine in them than just typical urban smog that might come out of a tailpipe. The EPA designates a certain set of chemicals and compounds, heavy metals, as hazardous air pollutants. The acronym is HAPS, H-A-P-S. And in that category, they place somewhat arbitrarily 188 different compounds and elements, heavy metals. Those are the most toxic compounds there are, and they're toxic because they create real health problems, cancer in particular, at very small volumes. Refinery emissions are very concentrated in HAPS. So a ton of emissions from the refineries is not the same as a ton of emissions from a bunch of people's car tailpipes. So the refinery emissions are more toxic than average emissions. That's the first thing to remember. The second thing is that there is a substantial body of evidence, including internal EPA memos, that says that the real emissions from refineries could be as much as 100 times greater than what the official inventories indicate because of the thousands and thousands of valves that are involved in a refinery. A lot of them have fugitive emissions and leaks that just are not detected and not picked up. And other countries that have mandated more specific technology to try and detect those emissions have shown that typical refineries in the United States really do have anywhere from 3 to 100 times more emissions than what the official inventory figures reflect.
Okay.
So if that's the case, then the refineries are responsible not just for a big chunk of it, but a huge chunk of it. So that's one of the reasons why this is a particularly serious focal point in the battle over clean air.
How can people get involved in trying to improve the air quality of where they live? I mean, you read in the newspaper, voluntary no-drive day, or industry should act at its most efficient. What can people do to try and improve their own air quality?
Well, we're all for that sort of voluntary emphasis, but we don't think by any means that that's sufficient. We've got to change public policy if we're really going to clean this up. We have a state government that right now is planning to spend $600 million on building a new freeway in South Davis County. So on the one hand, we have appeals for us all to drive less, and yet we're going to spend $600 million to make it easier for us to drive more. If you think that's a contradiction, it is a contradiction. It's a complete contradiction. So that's just one of many examples where state policy is totally disconnected from the appeals for us all to change our behavior. We need to change our behavior. But we've also got to have state policy de-emphasize our love affair with fossil fuels.
Dr. Brian Mensch, president and founder of the Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment, I want to thank you for coming in and speaking with us today.
Thanks for having me.
You can hear this and all of the interviews we air on the program at our website, kcpw.org. I'm Roger McDonough. We'll be right back. That's full time for the program today. Our show was produced by Lauren Colucci. We had additional help from Jesse Ellis and Mr. Tyler Ford. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. Tomorrow on the program, we've got Jennifer Hare Salem and Jency Anderson of the Rocky Mountain Innocence Center on working to free people who have been wrongfully imprisoned. I'm Roger McDonough. You've been listening to The Rundown here on KCPW. The Utah Business Report and Marketplace are coming up next.